Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock album.
Guitar up.
One, turn two, that guitar three. Up.
Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's precisely 45 past 1, the 45th anniversary of Led Zeppelin 1.
Good times, bad times, you know I don't have my share. When my woman left home for a brown eyed man, I still don't seem to care.
Baby, 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 I'm gonna leave you home.
I think everyone was inspired in that band. Everyone was a star, you know. There wasn't a weakness there, you know. Every single person was strong. Hi there, this is Jimmy Page in the studio.
Hello, I'm Robert Plant in the studio for Led Zeppelin 1.
In their top 500 albums of all time, in 2003, Rolling Stone magazine writers, contributors, and hundreds of rock recording artists rank Led Zeppelin's debut album at number 29, noting that these 45 years after its January 1969 release, quote, heavy metal still lives in its shadow. The UK magazine Uncut's list of the 100 greatest debut albums placed it at no less than number 7. But when Q Magazine compiled the 21 albums that changed music, Led Zeppelin 1 came in at a breathtaking number 6 on that uber elite list. Not bad for a 45-year-old. The man who created that sound was a shy guitar wizard named Jimmy Page. For years, Page had been developing a reputation as a gifted and innovative guitarist, first as a London studio player and then with the Yardbirds. Certainly Robert Plant, John Paul Jones, and John Bonham were essential elements in Led Zeppelin's success, but it was Jimmy Page who was primarily responsible for the stunning range of sounds on Led Zeppelin 1, the distorted tones, the echoes, the sheer power of it all. Today, the sound effects and guitar techniques he used have become commonplace, almost cliche. But in 1968, Jimmy Page was doing things with guitar sounds that no one had ever done before.
I had an idea of exactly what I wanted to do with the first album and the band. There's a lot of contrast on the album, and that's one of the things that I really wanted to get together, which I didn't think anyone else was doing, but then again, you know, that's the way it shaped up. But fortunately, it shaped up the way that I, you know, hoped it was going to. I think everyone was inspired in that band. Everyone was a star, you know. There wasn't a weakness there, you know. Every single person was strong. And the chemistry of the four people put together was, we know what it is now.
That's Good Times, Bad Times, leading off Led Zeppelin 1. Jimmy Page was a legend in London recording circles long before the rest of the world knew his name. Page was the preeminent studio guitarist of his day, playing on hundreds of sessions in 1964 and 65, adding uncredited guitar licks to records by The Who, The Kinks, Donovan. Remember Hurdy Gurdy Man, that crackling guitar? That's Jimmy Page. The word was that if Page couldn't play it, it couldn't be played.
Yeah, you know, I just developed different styles of guitar through that, actually, with the discipline of the studio and then my interest on guitar. And I've been very keen on acoustic guitar playing anyway, fingerstyle playing. Oh boy, I was on all manner of things, you know, jazz sessions. You'd be surprised what I played on. I got, at the end of it, there was less guitar being played as such. I mean, as far as any sort of figure or lyrical guitar being played, I was just sort of strumming along virtually, and I got fed up with it. I've got to also say that 90% of the studio work that I got booked in on, I didn't know what I was going to be doing. You know, they'd just say, bring such and such an instrument, and I didn't know it could be anything. I mean, if it's an acoustic guitar, it could have been a folk session, it could have been just you know, just acoustic within an orchestra, or it could, you know, anything, you know. But the thing that finished it off for me was got to this one date, and it was a Muzak session. Muzak's the sort of stuff you hear played in hotel lobbies. That's right, Jimmy Page was booked in to do that, and I said to the guy afterwards, who called a fixer, these guys are called. And I said, well, don't ever do that to me again. There were so many other guitarists, so I was the youngest guitarist, but there's so many others who could have just fitted that session. And I had a hard time reading all that music on there too, because once they start, they count you in, 1, 2, 3, 4, off you go, and you have to turn and keep reading. And I thought, this isn't what I'm all about. Made my mind up that it was time to go. And so I got out of that. And it just so happened at that point of time, that's when the Yardbirds opportunity came up for the second time round. But this time I took it.
Page had been first asked to join the Yardbirds in March 1965 when Eric Clapton left the band. Jimmy declined then, instead recommending his friend Jeff Beck. But in the spring of 1966, Jimmy Page got a second chance.
It just so happened there was an incredible bust-up one night, and the bass player left. He was advising the drummer to leave as well, but he didn't want to leave. But he was adamant he wasn't going to carry on. And they had no bass player, so I said, okay, well, look, Jeff and I on the way home were talking in the car, and I said, well, look, if you like, I'll come in on bass, because he'd always wanted me to come in the Yardbirds, but it was always known as Five Live Yardbirds. Well, there's an album, Five Live Yardbirds. I said, we can't do that, you can't change that whole thing and have six just because we want to play together. But suddenly there was, the opportunity was there. So I took over the bass, and the whole idea was that the rhythm guitarist would learn the bass, and then we could get on with playing some dual lead guitars.
Jeff Beck left the Yardbirds in 1967, and what was left of the band had essentially disintegrated by the spring of 68. But even as the Yardbirds came apart, Jimmy Page was coming into his own, writing new songs, experimenting with new recording techniques, anxious to try them in a recording studio.
When Jeff left the Yardbirds, and it was left with just the four of us, and within the frameworks of those numbers, there was a lot of free-form improvisation, and I'd come up with a lot of riffs as the numbers had changed. Obviously, I wasn't playing the riffs that he played in those particular numbers, anyway, the free-form ones. Obviously, I had to do the same riffs for Over, Under, Sideways, Down. But, constantly I was developing all these different ideas, and I'd been playing with the bow and all that sort of thing. And I was extremely interested in acoustic music, finger-picking music. And I wanted to tie all this stuff up with some ideas as well with the recorded aspect of it, to have more ambience. And then I had this idea of backwards echo, which I'd actually suggested before on a Yardbirds track, which we used. And I knew it worked. So just different ideas that I had, and just really wanted to see if it could work, and it did. The idea of it was there was going to be a lot of light and shade on the album, but also there would be like a sort of tension, dramatic tension.
With this first album, Led Zeppelin would spark a rather heated debate concerning whether white Anglo-Europeans had any credibility co-opting black American blues music to their great financial gain and fame. What most of these detractors failed to realize was that the strict social class system in England was as repressive to a young Robert Plant growing up in the Midlands as the racial biases of 20th century America, which allowed Plant to relate to the themes indigenous to blues music. Here's Led Zeppelin singer Robert Plant with me in the studio.
I've been in blues bands since I was 15 years old, so as naive as it may have been, I was with other people who had a like attitude. So they were thinking and listening to the blues, Big Bill Brunsey, Lead Belly, Sonny Terry, Brownie McGee, a lot of country blues, and then exposed to the city blues of the Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter stuff, Buddy Guy. Blues was had an incredible resurgence in the mid-60s in Britain, and it was as powerful as pop music. It was great, really, when you think about it.
Willie Dixon's classic I Can't Quit You, arranged by Jimmy Page and recorded by the band first known as the New Yardbirds. When we come back, you'll find out that Robert Plant was not Jimmy Page's first choice as Led Zeppelin's singer. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and for a lot more, check out inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Jimmy Page and Robert Plant for the 45th anniversary of Led Zeppelin 1.
Hi there, this is Jimmy Page in the studio for Led Zeppelin 1.
Hello, I'm Robert Plant in the studio for Led Zeppelin 1.
Thanks, gentlemen. I'm Redbeard. This is the 45th anniversary of that album, released January 17, 1969. After the Yardbirds' breakup in 1968, Jimmy Page got the chance to do a lucrative tour of Scandinavia as the new Yardbirds. Page's choice for lead singer was a guy named Terry Reid. Here's Jimmy Page with me in the studio.
I wanted somebody who could really belt out the blues and, well, rock really, but blues, but also be able to handle other, well, you know, the subtleties as well. So it needed somebody with a really, really good vocal range and power. I called him up and he'd already signed to us for a solo career. But he suggested, Robert, he said, there's this guy who's really good blues singer and he plays harp. He lives in the Midlands and he gave me his name. I tracked Robert down and went to go and see him.
Led Zeppelin lead singer, Robert Plant.
He came to see me. I was playing in a band. Yes, I remember it all now. And he came up to me and he said, where's Robert Plant? And I said, why? He said, well, I've come up to see him. I said, well, who are you? And he said, Jimmy Page. I said, who are you then? You know, I was one of those sort of things. He thought I was the roadie and I wasn't going to tell him I knew who he was.
Did you know of Jimmy's reputation at the time when you first met him?
Well, I knew what he did. I knew what band he was in.
Did it intimidate you at all?
No. Well, I was 19. You know, I mean, I was fed up at fixing the roads and working on a Saturday and a Sunday, you know. I mean, it was nice to meet anybody. And when I heard him play, it was such a celebration. I keep using that word, but it was great. He's somebody who could play the blues with an attitude that wasn't just black. It was very much London art school, the kind of attitude, the kind of aggressive, angular thing. Very good, I like it.
In addition to Robert Plant, Jimmy Page recruited John Paul Jones, a veteran London session musician, to play bass and keyboards. And finally, a drummer that Plant had recommended, named John Bonham, affectionately known as Bonzo.
Jonesy called me up and said, oh, you're getting a band together. He said, I'd really like to be part of it. And obviously we knew each other from the session days, because he was one of the young players as well. He was the youngest bass player on the thing. At the time, I had a couple of drummers in mind, but Robert said, I know a really good drummer in the Midlands, Bonzo. So we went up to see him. Oh, we saw him in London, actually. He was playing with Tim Rose. I thought, yeah, okay. It took ages to get Bonzo to actually agree to come and be part of it, because he had a steady job with Tim Rose, you see. He was just exactly the type of drummer I was looking for. If I mentioned the drummers that I liked, you wouldn't know them anyway, the ones that I was thinking of. In fact, I couldn't get hold of them. But it was really, you know, a real, you know, powerhouse drummer. That's what it needed. That's a backbone of a band, is a powerhouse drummer. Eventually, we managed to get the four of us into one room, and that was it. It just exploded.
Up next, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant return to reveal the beginnings of what the All Music Guide calls, and I quote, a significant turning point in the evolution of hard rock and heavy metal. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and dig in more here at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Jimmy Page and Robert Plant for 45 past 1, the 45th anniversary of Led Zeppelin 1.
Hi there, this is Jimmy Page in the studio for Led Zeppelin 1.
Hello, I'm Robert Plant in the studio for Led Zeppelin 1.
Thanks again, guys. I'm Redbeard on the 45th anniversary of the Led Zeppelin debut, which eventually went to number 10 on the sales chart, and since release, January 1969, has sold over 10 million copies just in the U.S. Upon hearing of Jimmy Page's plans of his new band in late 1968, The Who's Keith Moon remarked that should go over like a lead balloon. Page loved the image and immediately adopted the name Led Zeppelin. By the end of December, they would be touring America for the first time. Here's Jimmy Page and first Robert Plant with me in the studio.
We were in a tiny weenie room with all this equipment, not really knowing what on earth we'd do and what on earth it would be like. And we just started playing and it was like powerful stuff, you know? And we all knew then that this thing, no matter how it was exposed to people, primarily when you play music, you've got to please yourself. You know, you can't look at the chart or whatever it is and say, I've got to be there for that reason. And we knew this thing that we got here would kind of clear a lot of crap out of the way. It was like a big, big hammer going, whoosh, and that was it.
We all got in to this really, really tiny room. It was about, believe me, it was about twice the size of this. All four. Yeah, mind you, we didn't have as much equipment as what we've got now, or what we had in the later days. And we did Train Kept a Rolling. And that was it. We just knew that it was happening. And then after that, the rehearsal started in my house. In the top part of my house, I'll tell you what, and this was on the River Thames, I'll tell you what, it must have travelled this noise. The neighbours were magic, actually, they never complained once. We were still rehearsing there, actually, when we were rehearsing the second album.
As it turns out, the late Ramones guitarist and band leader Johnny Ramone cited Led Zeppelin's Communication Breakdown as the influence for his signature downstroke punk rock guitar style and tempo. Here's Jimmy Page with me in the studio.
The bow. I used to use it in that. Well, with the Yardbirds, we used to do that and I'm a Man. That was one of their hits over here. But I used to use the bow in that as well. I didn't do anything provided it made the guitar sound different. Do you know the funniest thing about all of this bow business is, you know, David McCallum, his father was a session violinist over there, and he's the one who suggested about this bow business. Have you ever tried bowing the guitar? And I said, no, I haven't. I said, well, I don't think it'd be very easy because, like, a violin has got an arched, you know, an arched neck, so to speak, and an arched bridge. The guitar doesn't, you see. But he said, well, have a go, and I tried it. And in fact, that was the thing that gave me the idea to do it. I knew it was really good, what we were doing. Good Lord, I knew it was good. We did a few dates in England, quite a few, actually. And I don't know what the undercurrent was, but it was just like, yeah, they're okay. But it wasn't until we got over here and played at, I think it was the Fillmore, that suddenly we went in right at the, must have gone in right at the right time, because there was Country Joe and the Fish were on, and of course, you know, all those sort of family bands like that, and Taj Mahal, I believe, was on that, and I'm not sure, I think so. But all those bands had become so sort of, like, it was like a big family, you know. And suddenly we just went in there and started off with all this stuff, and they just didn't know what had hit them. And they just went wild. And then suddenly there was this wildfire just spread across America. There's this band that's up there, and it's really happening.
And now, compare all of the legend and myth of what Led Zeppelin would later grow into over the next decade, that whole Hammer of the Gods, sex, sorcery, and decadence image, with this true life description by Robert Plant that he told me in the studio.
And we only had one guy looking after the band, driving the station wagon, so I did the PA as well. So I had to change the volume of the voice from the stage. So nobody had any idea of whether the voice was loud enough or not. You just took pot luck. And I've heard bootlegs from the San Francisco, from the Fillmore. And it's terrible. It's terrible because I'm still fiddling around with this amplifier with its treble and its bass control thing, which I bought with me from the Band of Joy, which is totally inadequate and probably about as loud as the television set is these days. But it was about 150 watts. And now you don't even play with that. 1,500 watts at a rehearsal or whatever it is, you know. So, I mean, it must have been a very funny sight. This guy with no shoes on and his wedding suit, pirouetting around, pulling all sorts of funny faces and also controlling the level of his own voice from a box which was placed in front of the bass drum, which was the amplifier. It was great. But that's how it was.
Looking at the first album, and it's, you know, it's a mixture of, there's blues on it, and there's acoustic music, and there's, I mean, you've got Black Mountainside instrumental, which is finger picking, and then you've got the extension of that type of thing with Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, which starts with the acoustic, but it also has all this, you know, high power accents on it as well, electric accents, and very dramatic quality, you know. I mean, I still think that holds up, you know. I think
now many more times indeed. With the late John Bonham on drums, John Paul Jones, Robert Plant, and Jimmy Page, the latter three recently were awarded America's highest cultural medals by President Barack Obama before the 2013 Kennedy Center Honors Gala. And Jimmy Page has confirmed that deluxe editions of the first three Led Zeppelin albums are due this year, with alternate mixes, previously unreleased live concert recordings, and remastered sound. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2014, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and visit inthestudio.net.